Newtown Radioactive, number 18, for Thursday, October 13th, 2005. So I figured I haven't managed to find a theme song yet for Nuketown Radioactive, so, you know, why not just go and borrow somebody else's? For those of you who don't know, and I guess if you're not in your 30s, you probably don't, that is the theme to Star Blazers Season 1, The Quest for Iskandar. The theme song for Season 3 is slightly different. That's the one about the Comet Empire. There is Season 3 as well, The Bowler Wars, but I've never actually seen that one. It had different voice actors from the original series, so I just never really got around to trying to track it down and actually see it. So this is, as always, Ken Newquist. I'm your host, and this podcast is late. I'd hoped to get it out on Monday, but I came home from work, and I saw that I saw that half-mad look in my wife's eye, the one that comes from either sneaking a peek at the Necromonicon or having spent an entire day with a grumpy two-and-a-half-year-old. So I decided that caulking the tub and shower so that Sue didn't have to was probably a better idea than knocking out the podcast, so... sorry, guys, but, you know, caulking came first. And, you know, that's actually been a theme for the last, for the last podcast and this one, and probably for the foreseeable future, because it's the fall, and we are into home improvement season, which is always kind of a trial for me, because, you know, see, a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago at this point, I don't know, Mer Lafferty did a podcast, and one of her essays was about, pregnancy and being a geek, and how she just wasn't meeting people's expectations about what it was like, what she should be like. And, you know, I think guys run into this as well sometime with the whole stereotype thing where, you know, I'm a geek, guys, and that having been said, folks, when something breaks, people just assume that a guy's going to be able to know how to fix it. And you know what? I don't. I have some knowledge of how to use power tools, and I have, I know which end not to put next to me, and I know not to, say, try and saw a piece of wood while laying it on my legs while using a skill saw, but, which actually, you know, if you read the instructions for the skill saw, they advise against doing that. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, you know, stuff like caulking, I have to ask my wife how to do it, because, for example, while caulking the bathtub this week, I, you know, I'm sitting there, and I cut the top off the caulk, and I'm sitting there, and I'm trying to get the caulk to come out, and I've got the caulk gun, and I'm pulling the trigger, and I'm pulling the trigger, and it's not coming out, and all of a sudden, there's, like, it gives. I'm like, ah, cool, you know, it's working, except there's still no caulk coming out, and I realize... Oh, wait, there's something very wrong here. So finally I call Sue, and I'm like, you know, what am I doing wrong? Well, here it turns out, you know, I really should have read the instructions a little more closely, because it said puncture the tube, so I assumed that just meant cutting the top off of the caulk, right? Well, no, what you're supposed to do is take a pin and push it down into the top of the caulk tube. That breaks the seal and allows the caulk to come out. So what I had actually done was taken the back end of a caulking gun, and if you've never seen a caulking gun, there's like this disc, and there's this stick that drives it into the caulking tube and pushes the caulk out, right? Well, I broke right through the back of the caulking tube. So, yeah, ungodly mess. Caulk everywhere once the top came off. So it was just a colossal pain in the ass. So, you know, the thing is that when you're a homeowner, it doesn't really matter if you don't know how to do this crap, unless you're willing to pay somebody else to do it. You got to learn how to do it, right? So I have been spending the last 2 weeks and probably the next couple of weeks doing just home improvement stuff. But that's okay because I have figured out the perfect way to merge geekiness with home repair, and that would be listening to my podcasts, which I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, but I wanted to get a little more into specific. I got an iPod Shuffle, and these are tiny, tiny little iPods. They're about the size of a pack of chewing gum, maybe a little bit longer. And the cool thing about these is that I had one of the second generation iPods for years. And the cool thing about this iPod Shuffle is that there's two things that are cool about it. First of all, it's really easy to load songs onto it. So I just hook it up to my PowerBook. I drag a couple of podcasts over from iTunes. I put them in the order I want to listen to, and then I just go. The other thing that's really cool about it is the size. It's actually small enough that it will fit into that stupid little pocket on your jeans that nobody ever uses. You know, the change pocket, I guess, is officially what it's supposed to be for. I certainly know. I never use it. But anyway, it'll fit into that pocket, and the nice thing about it is it doesn't get in the way. So, you know, it's possible to, like, caulk in a bathtub or paint the back porch or whatever without the damn thing getting in your way. In fact, it's very easy to actually kind of forget it's there if you're not listening to a podcast and you're kind of unplugged. So my number one fear is that I'm going to wash the little sucker when I take off my jeans. But so far, I've been very conscious of my iPod Shuffle. So, you know, it's never going to replace my iPod. You know, it's not something I would want to listen to all of my music on. It's good for that specific task of wanting to listen to a couple of podcasts in a row or wanting to listen to a specific album. You know, for my books and such, yeah, I'll stick with my normal iPod. But for this kind of stuff, hey, you know, it works well, and it actually has me wanting to do home improvement, which, you know, gosh, I never thought I'd actually say. Now, in terms of a little site news, I wanted to talk about a new contest. Yes, another giveaway on Radioactive. I'm going to be giving away a copy of the book Finding Serenity, Antiheroes, Lost Shepherds, and Space Hookers in Joss Whedon's Firefly. And a review of that is presently up on Nuketown, and if you check out the show notes, you'll be able to get the link to the review. Basically, what this book is a collection of essays by a whole bunch of different people about the Joss Whedon series Firefly. And I thought it was pretty appropriate. I've had actually copies on hand for a while, and I'd been meaning to review it for months and months. I think I got it back in April, and actually talked about it on one of the first Radioactives. But I just never got around to writing the review, and I figured with Serenity out now in theaters, now is a good time to get this out. So, anyway, what do you got to do to get to win the book? Here's what you got to do. To enter, just send me an email at nuketown@gmail.com with the subject line Finding Serenity Giveaway, and I will randomly pick one person to win the book. Submissions need to be received by 10:22. Yeah, can you tell I'm reading directly from the freaking show notes? Yeah, I need to have the submissions in by the 22nd of October, and I'll announce the winner on the October 23rd show. Once again, this is unfortunately going to be restricted to people in the U.S., so I don't go completely broke trying to ship these things overseas. And at some point, you know, maybe I'll just do an Amazon gift certificate giveaway for the folks overseas, because I feel bad that you guys are kind of left out of it. I do know I have a couple of overseas listeners, so don't worry, folks, I'm still working on that. But anyway, it's a cool book. It's not perfect. I found that, it's actually edited by a woman who had written a bunch of, a couple of different episodes for Buffy and Angel, and she wrote the episode Shindig for Firefly, and unfortunately, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But anyway, she edited it, and it's got a good collection of essays. It's got some that are serious, some that are funny, but the thing that kind of struck me as most lacking in the book was the fact that it didn't go into politics at all, which to me, I mean, and mind you, I'm something of a political animal, that was one of the really cool things about Firefly, was that it was so different from what you see on almost every other science fiction, where you've got, you know, the heroes that are fighting against this kind of monolithic bureaucratic alliance, and, you know, instead of working for the Federation, they're basically working against the Federation, and the book doesn't really touch on that at all. There's one essay on the illusion of freedom, but nothing that even came close to what I was looking for. But having said that, it's a cool book. I do recommend reading it, and you know, you can check out the full review on Nuketown.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. tsfpn.com.
So, thanks to all this ongoing home improvement around the old Nuke estate, I've got a bunch more sites of note this week. First off, I wanted to start with the Ogre Cave audio report, which I've been reading Ogre Cave for a long time. Their website's at www.ogrecave.com, and basically this is a gaming news and commentary website. Basically, they take news that's happening within the industry, like the new huge miniatures from Wizards or the delay of the, was it, 4th or 5th edition Shadowrun, and offer their own little spin to it, get some comments from listeners, from readers, and generally it's a fun site. I mean, they have it's more than just, like, you know, if you go over to gamingreport.com, which is a cool site, don't get me wrong, it's a lot of just kind of info dump, huge amount of information, not a whole lot of depth to it. You know, you get the occasional comment, but it's not the same. These guys, they offer their own comments on it, they give it a spin. So, for my money, I really like going to Ogre Cave. I'll visit Gaming Report, once a week or so, particularly when I'm hunting for new review ideas, but Ogre Cave is the one I visit almost every other day, so. But anyway, they've created a podcast, and it's pretty cool. It's published about every week to 2 weeks, like most podcasts, this one included. They're not always all that reliable in getting it out exactly when they said they were going to. And like the regular site, it offers gaming news coupled with rants and commentary. You've got several different hosts from a variety of backgrounds, a couple of different gamers, a couple of people who don't actually play D&D, which is cool. There's also one person who's a shop owner, which is very cool because you get the perspective from him, looking at what's actually moving off of shelves, what people are actually buying, which is, you know, a nice insight. And in general, it just gives a good overview of what's going on in the gaming industry, be it role-playing games, miniatures games, board games, whatever. So, very geeky, very good. You can check it out at www.ogrecave.com/audio. Now, another site I wanted to mention, I just got an email from these folks during the week, is, I'm going to probably butcher this, but the name of the site is LibriVox. And what this is, it's a really cool idea. Basically, they're attempting to create audio recordings of as many public domain books as possible. And they're looking for volunteers, which is actually why they emailed me. Now, I don't actually have time to do this right now, just because of everything else that's going on. But I think it's a worthwhile thing, so I wanted to promote it. You can learn about them at LibriVox.blogsome.com. You probably couldn't actually get what that URL is from that, but as always, it will be in the show notes. They are currently looking, I think they're recording Journey to the Center of the Earth, Journey to the Center of the Earth. Yeah, I can pronounce things. They're also working on Treasure Island and just a bunch of other cool books. So, looks to be a great project. I would definitely recommend checking it out. And if you can and you have the time, you know, why not? Volunteer. Now, next podcast I want to talk about is Edge of the Edge. Was it last week? Maybe 2 weeks ago, I went on a little quest to try and find some other podcasts that might be happening in my hometown. And I actually found some, which was kind of cool. Actually, I didn't find them in my own specific town of Easton, Pennsylvania, but I did find another one in the Lehigh Valley, and surprise, surprise, it's a geek podcast. It's based in Bethlehem, like the person who's doing it is based in Bethlehem, PA, which is the next town over from Easton. Let's see. He doesn't actually give his full name on the website. But anyway, it's based in Bethlehem, PA, which is one city over from Easton, in the Lehigh Valley. It's being done by a sci-fi loving, new media designing child of the 80s, which means he's kind of like me, except he plays racquetball, and I tend to get hurt if I try and play racquetball. His podcast includes commentary, movie reviews, and occasional geekiness, though most of that, actually, that last bit of geekiness has been moved to another podcast he's doing, which is called Phasers on Stun. The Edge of the Edge podcast can be found at edgeoftheedge, all one word, .blogspot.com. Phasers on Stun can be found at phasersonstun, all one word, .blogspot.com. And, of course, the links will be in the show note. While we're talking local websites, I think I might as well talk about the beer I'm drinking right now, which, I don't know, might be attributing to the errors. What do you think, guys? it's actually called Black Hole Beer, which I thought was the name of the beer is actually called Black Hole, which I thought was, you know, very appropriate for the Radioactive podcast. It's brewed by Weyerbacher, which is basically a microbrewery, which is located in Easton, PA. Very cool. They actually used to have an awesome brew pub that was, I think it was over, like, on 7th Street or something like that. But unfortunately, they closed when they closed the brew pub, when they moved to a bigger facility to actually brew beer. But it's good beer. They have a whole bunch of different brews. They've got a whole bunch of like just really cool different beers that come out with the different seasons. So if you happen to be in Pennsylvania or you happen to be in the tri-state area and you're in the beer store and you see Weyerbacher, I wholeheartedly recommend picking it up. I definitely recommend picking up their multi-pack if you can find one. Or their variety pack. It's like you would expect from a variety pack. It's got a bunch of different beers in it. It's got stuff like the Merry Monk, which I don't know exactly how to describe. It's kind of like an amberish colored beer, but it's got a good kick to it. The Old Heathen, which I haven't actually tried, but I thought was just an awesome name for a beer, which I think is like a darker beer. Black Hole, obviously, is a darker beer. But anyway, they've just got a bunch of good beers, and I wholeheartedly recommend them. There's going to be a link to them in the show notes, to the specific Black Hole beer in the show notes. But you can learn more about them at www.weyerbacher.com. So you're probably wondering, Ken, what is with the Halo Rock Anthem for Saving the World intro to the next segment? Well, two things. First of all, the original Halo soundtrack still kicks ass. Better than the Halo 2 soundtrack. And just, you know, all-around good mix of kind of mood music combined with just weird Alien Covenant stuff. And then, of course, this track, Rock Anthem for Saving the World, which is probably one of the all-time best gaming music tracks, original gaming music tracks of all time. This was the track that really made it for me. But more importantly, it actually ties into the next book I want to review, which is The Integral Trees by Larry Nevin. So don't get the connection. Well, here you go. Halo takes place on a ring world, and Larry Nevin wrote Ringworld. And The Integral Trees is Integral Trees. You know, I keep mispronouncing the name of this damn book, but you know what? I'm just going to go through it. The Integral Trees is obviously also by Larry Nevin. It is published by Delroy Books. It's 480 pages long. You can check out the show notes for a link to Amazon where you can buy the book. But this is another one of Nevin's concept novels, in which he postulates just a really, really cool environment and then populates it with characters and then just sets the whole thing in motion. This world, this setting is just as unique as Ringworld was. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Ringworld, it's the original Ringworld, not the one in Halo, because the ring in Halo is much, much smaller than the one in Ringworld. But basically, in Ringworld, you take all the material in the solar system. You accumulate it into one band, it's several thousand miles in diameter, or not in diameter, wide, yes, several thousand miles wide. And in diameter, it has a diameter of the Earth's orbit. Now, by doing this, you end up with, this huge ring, and the inside of the ring, which you then proceed to put grass, ground, atmosphere, everything else, basically ends up providing you with a surface area. It's the size of several million Earths. I mean, it's just a huge concept, just a tremendously really cool book. But I digress. The Integral Trees by Larry Nevin is that kind of really cool hard science big vision kind of thing. But for my money, I think the Integral Trees might actually be the better book. Anyway, here's the setting. In the distant future, Earth's authoritarian world government, I think it's simply known as the State, is seeding worlds throughout the galaxy via colony ships. One of these ships, the Discipline, never actually reaches its destination. Instead, it encounters a smoke ring, which is a huge gas torus surrounding a neutron star. It's comprised, this gas torus, or really huge big gas cloud, is comprised of oxygen and nitrogen. Basically, it's a free-floating atmosphere, which is constantly replenished by a large planet that orbits the star. Anyway, because it's comprised of oxygen and nitrogen, and has some water in it, the ring is actually capable of supporting life, albeit life that must survive in a free-fall, zero-gravity environment. So, something goes wrong. As the ship is investigating the gas torus, and we don't exactly know what goes wrong, the crew is forced to flee it and ends up colonizing the smoke ring. Now, 500 years later, as the book opens, we find the descendants of humanity have evolved into their own subspecies, which has been uniquely adapted for life in zero-G. And they have very little memory of distant Earth or of the ship that brought them there. It's all basically passed into legend. The humans themselves are distorted visions of ourselves, so they're longer, they're much taller, obviously, because they've been growing in a zero-gravity environment. They have longer fingers, that sort of thing. Some of the colonists have adapted to living on these gigantic integral trees. The integral tree looks like an integral sign. So it's basically it's got this slender, long, slender central region, and then it has these two tufts that point off to the east and the west at the bottoms of it. The central trunk is about several hundred miles long, and it basically ascends up through the gas torus. The tufts of the top ends of the trees that give it that integral look are covered with a green stuff. it's kind of a weird substance, but anyway, it's something that's capable of photosynthesis. And because of the way that the gravitational forces work on the trees, they create areas of low gravity near the ends. And that's where the humans live. Right there, you've got just a really cool environment. And actually, you know, there's an awful lot of math that's involved in this, and it took me a little while to get my brain around exactly how this was working. If you're into physics and you're into hard science, you're going to love this. If not, just kind of bear with him and just get through that section. And actually, I have it linked in the show notes to a webpage that talks about basically gravitational tides and how the integral trees work. Now, anyway, the problem with these trees is that they can only grow so big. If they grow much bigger than their maximum, what happens is they start to break apart. And the humans that we encounter living on this one of these trees, well, it turns out that their tree is going to do this. It's going to break apart, and as a result, they have to flee their tree. Now, think about that for a second. This isn't like being on a planet. If you're going to leave your tree, you're basically cast out into weightlessness, and how do you move about this weightlessness? How do you propel yourself? And the mechanics that go into that, the descriptions of how these people figure out how to move away from their tree, how to escape certain destruction, is just really cool. Also cool is the other environments that have evolved in this gas torus. As all of this is happening, humanity is being watched from the Discipline, which still survives, as does its artificial intelligence, which goes by the name of Charles Davis Kendi. And as the book progresses, Kendi is able to restore contact with his long-lost crew. And as you read through the book, you follow the adventures of the refugee and their struggles to find a new home. You encounter these other habitats, such as a huge, basically free-floating bush, other trees, that sort of thing. And This is a good read. It's kind of an incomplete read. You're left at the end of this novel going, okay, so what happens next? Fortunately, there was a sequel called The Smoke Ring, which answers all of those questions. And because it has all of the great setup that was already done by the Integral Trees, it just kind of launches into more in-depth into, okay, what actually happened when these people were forced to be stranded in the Gas Torus? What sort of civilization actually exists apart from the trees? And that book is just really an awesome read as well. Now, I think this book is just a great exercise in world buildings, and in many ways, it's better than the much more famous Ringworld. Now, I love Ringworld, I love the idea of Ringworld, but frankly, the characters were just kind of science fiction caricatures. Yeah, I can speak. Anyway, they're stereotypes. These characters have more depth to them. They're less stereotypical, and I mean, something else that really helps, I think, is that they take place apart from Larry Nevin's known space novels, which really frees it of a lot of baggage that you encounter in Ringworld. I mean, I think when I first read Ringworld, I was kind of put off because I didn't really know a lot of the background about the universe and about the Kazin and the Man-Kazin Wars and all that stuff. And having read a bunch of the books now and going back to Ringworld, I enjoyed it a lot more. But having said that, this book is a lot more self-contained, and I think he does a better job of character building. And, you know, yes, there is a lot of math, and yes, there's stuff that you have to get your brain around in order to understand exactly how this all works. And, you know, it can occasionally be difficult to visualize, but you know what? I like books that make me work. I like books that make me think, and this one is one that qualifies just all around. So I definitely recommend it. I would give it 9 out of 10. It's a really good, solid book. Definitely worth picking up. Definitely worth a read. So, that'll about do it for now. Next time around on Nuketown Radioactive number 19, I'll be doing a review of the soundtrack for the movie Mirror Mask, which it's a very interesting soundtrack. If you've ever wanted to know what a Neil Gaiman book or comic book might sound like, well, check out the podcast. And in terms of getting in touch with Nuketown, you've got a couple ways of doing it. We've got the forums. We have two sets of forums, the Nuketown forum at www.nuketown.com/forum, or the Science Fiction Podcast Network forums at tsfpn.com/... I have no idea what the huge URL is, so go to the tsfpn.com website and click on the forum link, or just go to the show notes, because the links will be there. You can email me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can Skype me. My username is Skype. And finally, you can even send me a message via AOL Instant Messenger. My username is knewquist@mac.com. So that's it, folks. I'll talk to you all later.